Chinashi Shabandana. Translation. Maharaj Yudhishthira at once relinquished all his garments, belt, and ornaments of the royal order and became completely disinterested and unattached to everything. Please repeat. Maharaj Yudhishthira at once relinquished.
Maharaj Yudhishthira at once relinquished.
All his garments.
All his garments.
Belt and ornaments.
Belt and ornaments.
Of the royal order.
Of the royal order.
And became completely disinterested and unattached to everything.
And became completely disinterested and unattached to everything.
Maharaj, give me 1 second here.
Okay.
Okay, we're set.
Hare Krishna. So, of course, again, this is the first two cantos, first chapter is all, first canto is all this history in the background before Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit meet. And now Krishna's left the planet. And Arjuna remained in some kind of earthly consciousness long enough to convey the message to Yudhisthira. And then he went into samadhi and lost all contact with the external world, the gross world. And now Yudhisthira, he arranged his family situation properly. He put somebody in charge of the world, somebody in charge of Mathura. And now he's going into samadhi. And I think the previous verse describes maybe the elements or something like that. I'm not sure. But at some point here it describes also the elements. At least in his whole process, he renounces his political situation. Then he renounces his personal, physical clothes and these kind of extensions in the world. Then it's describing how he starts to merge each of the grosser elements into the subtler elements. For example, smell gets merged into to taste. Taste gets merged into color. Color merges into touch. Touch merges into sound or space. Space merges into the mind. Sound merges into the mind. The mind merges into the senses. The senses merge into the mahatattva. Into the intelligence. And that merges into the mahatattva. And then, you know, one no longer has a material body. Of course, maybe the body goes on existing, but you don't identify with yours anymore, with yourself anymore. It's just something there, or, you know, which you can encounter somehow or other. It's like our understanding of Sankhya. So today, we're looking at this verse, and it's really exciting. Prabhupada's purport, actually before he left India, Prabhupada says, to become purified of material contamination is the necessary qualification for becoming one of the associates of the Lord. No one can become an associate of the Lord or can go back to Godhead without such purification. So when we read that, we're remembering one story that one time Gaur Govinda Maharaj was having a class and then questions. And one of his disciples, one girl, she asked him, she said, Maharaj, how can I get Krishna? And he started laughing. He said, oh, you want to get Krishna, Baba? He said, oh, you're going to suffer, Baba. Long time, Baba. Long time. So this is the situation. Maybe we're all complaining about our problems. You know, I became a devotee, but this is a natural process, you imbecile. You just decided to become a devotee. How can you complain about one problem after another with everything? Until finally we become detached from our political situation. We become detached from our appearance, you know. And then finally we become detached from our bodies even. It's very natural, you know. The body becomes more and more just like unmanageable. And just, you have to depend on Krishna's chanting just to kind of make it through life like that. It becomes more and more sensitive. So little things really what make it shake and tremble. It becomes so sensitive internally to different things. Yeah, so we can experience the most subtle thing, Krishna. So, Prabhupada goes on, Maharaj Yudhishthira, therefore, to become spiritually pure, at once gave up his royal opulence, relinquishing his royal dress and garments. Then Papa says the kashaya, or saffron loincloth, of a sannyasi indicates freedom from all attractive material garments. Someplace Prabhupada also says that the color saffron indicates a fire, that this is the color one puts on when he wants to burn up his material existence. And so then this takes us to reminding to Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Raghunath Das Goswami or about sannyas. And maybe we can look at those a little bit later. But here, let's go ahead and maybe finish the purport first. And then Prabhupada says that Maharaj Yudhishthira became disinterested in his kingdom and his family, and thus became free from all material contaminations or material designations. So it's, I guess they're saying that even if we identify ourselves as being part of a family or like that, it's a contamination, you know? Unless, of course, it's for our particular service. We need to adopt that attitude in terms of serving Krishna. And, of course, material designations, that brings to mind the verse, Sarvopadi Viniramuktam Tat Parat Vena Nirmalam Hrishikesha Hrishikena Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. And this is very easy to remember. Where I don't know, maybe it's from one of the Puranas or the Narada Pancharatra, but it's cited by Rupa Goswami in the beginning of Nectar of Devotion. I've heard that one of Prabhupada's garblers or something like that, some Gaudiya Mata Sannyasi, was criticizing that ISKCON devotees were uneducated and they didn't even know the definition of bhakti. So someone then cited Anyabilasita Shunyam Jnana Karmarina Arvitam Anukoyena Krishna Anushilam Bhakti Uchite. So he said, oh, you do know. Yeah. So this is verse Prabhupada quotes many times to establish what is bhakti. And it's very easy to remember the verse number because it's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. 1, 1, 1, 1. So at the end of the class, we're going to have a test to see how many people remember the verse number. 1, 1, 11. Eastern part, so it's part 1. First wave, so it's part 1. And verse number 11, 1, 1, 1, 1. And before that, some verses, Rupa Goswami has some verses invoking the auspiciousness from different personalities like that. But then he gives his Paribhasa Sutra. Some people call it that, the essential verse, which defines what is bhakti. And then the whole rest of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is then explaining that in great detail like that. So the text right after that, 1.1.12, is this verse. Sarvapadi Vanirmuktam Hrishikesha Hrishikena Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. So upapadi are these material designations. Sarvapadi. We have to get free from all these upadis. And it's a quotation from some other place, from a Purana. I think it's the Narada Pancharatra, maybe. Yeah. But then we always present Upadeshamrita as the summary of Upadeshamrita, of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In the Nectar of Instruction, it's very short, 11 verses. Rupa Goswami summarizes everything from how to control your senses all the way up to Radhakund. And then in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, something like 1,728 or something like that verses. Prabhupada calls it the complete science of Bhakti Yoga. But Nectar of Instruction starts the same way. Vacho Vegam, Manasa, Krodha Vegam. We have to engage our senses in the service of the master of the senses. And then we can become qualified to become teachers wherever we go. And so, of course, that's Hrishikesha, Hrishikena, Sevanam. So Yudhisthira, he did that. He became disinterested in his kingdom and family and thus became free from all material contamination or material designation. God. People are generally attached to various kinds of designations. The designations of family, society, country, occupation, wealth, position, and many others. Yeah. As long as one is attached to such designations, he is considered materially impure. The so-called leaders of men in the modern age are attached by material consciousness, but they do not know that such false consciousness is also another designation of the materially conditioned soul. One has to relinquish such designations before one can be eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. And for this, you know, some expansion on this, I remember there's a very beautiful text in Light of the Bhagavat, Light of the Bhagavat, that we use a lot during these university programs. And actually, yesterday we had two programs, one at the, basically speaking, the best, one of the two best is a competition. Universities in Mexico, Monterey Technological, all super modern buildings, everything else. And we have it mostly because one devotee, Lalita Gopi, she's a professor of sociology there and very respected professor, very nice person. So we did a class there. We've done it before, and they asked her to ask us to come back several times. So we've been doing Light of the Bhagavat symposiums there. We show blow-ups of the art. We have these workshops. So text number 16, Light of the Bhagavat, text number 16, gives beautiful description of this identification with the body, you know, and how we all these ideas of nationalism and everything else are just other kinds of identifications with this false body. Of course, the example is the moon. Actually, I've got it right here. I can just read it. Prabhupada says, at night, by the grace of the moonlight, the clouds in the sky can be seen moving. Yet the moon itself also appears to be moving, just as a living being appears to be moving because of false identification with matter. Yeah, and the purport Prabhupada says, yeah, this false ego obliges a living being to consider himself his material body, the offspring of the body to be his children, and the land of birth of the body to be an object of worship. Thus, the living being's conception of nationalism is another type of ignorance. Because of ignorance, the living being identifies with the land of his birth and moves with the misconceptions of national ideas. In fact, however, a living being does not belong to any nation or species of life. He has nothing to do with the body, as the moon has nothing to do with the clouds. God. Liberation does not mean stopping activities. It means being purified of illusory activities and becoming transcendental to relations with the gross and subtle bodies, which is nirmamo nirahankaraha. You know. Actually, in the prayers by Hanuman, in the fifth canto, when he glorifies Lord Ram, he says the same thing, nirmamo nirahankara. You have no false ego. You have no identification. In the purport there, Prabhupada goes into a long description of that nirahankara. It does not mean he has no ego. It means he has no false ego or identification with the body. So here Prabhupada's talking about these identifications of foolish people who identify with nationalism and become glorified by other fools for being such great nationalists, big family men. Yeah. But here he says, it's an example of Yudhisthira, who was a royal king, but prepared himself to leave this world without such national consciousness. And yet he is remembered even today because he was a great pious king, almost on the same level with the personality of Godhead Sri Ram. And because people of the world were dominated by such pious kings, they were happy in all respects, and it was quite possible for such great emperors to rule the world. So, of course, there are other descriptions we'll hear later. I guess it'll occur later, as it already occurred. Well, it's occurred before this, right? Yeah, before this is a description of how the world was when Yudhishthira was ruling everything. I mean, two very wonderful purports of the rule of Yudhishthira. And of course, in the chapters describing the rule of Ramachandra, there's also so many descriptions of how nice the world was. And right now, what we're doing now is we're working on these chapter study guides for the second year of our Bhakti Bhai Bhava program, Canto 3. And it's very nice. You know, there is Uddhava, is recollecting all these things. In chapter 3, he's recollecting all these pastimes. And he's describing the same thing, that under Yudhishthira's reign, everything was so harmonious, so nice. Everybody was in this superior consciousness. And even though they were in the material world, they executed their duties and they were in the material world in a regular fashion. And they were satisfied by a nice material situation. And then because of that, it was so easy then to have ability to withdraw and develop spiritual life along with their peaceful material life like that. Yeah. So of course, that's Prabhupada's purport then. And in the basic principle we see is just that Prabhupada's talking about this point of upadhi, becoming free from all these different material designations, which are all contaminations. And of course, it's subtle because, my goodness, I identify myself as being this kind of intelligent person or this kind of renowned person. Prabhupada says that a sannyasi may become attached to a certain temple or a few things that are the possessions of a sannyasi, like that. He says better than being a full-scale grihastha ashram where you identify with so many drawers in your house, so many closets, so many coat hangers, so many rugs, so many tablecloths, so many books, so many pictures, so many glasses, so many water bottles, so many cell phones, so many, mine. Yeah. But still, it's there. And I remember Prabhupada saying that at the time of death, they're going to erase our face. And it will never occur ever again. And when I even let myself contemplate it a little bit, and I could see that I'm attached to my face, If I went to the bathroom in the morning or something, I go and see my face in the mirror, and I think about it being erased, never occurring ever again. It's like, goodness, it's my face. They're erasing my face. But then what happens? And unless we actually can develop our spiritual relationship with Krishna and manifest our spiritual face reflected in Krishna's smile, then we won't become detached. We'll be hankering after our material face. It'll always be in our heart there. So it's kind of our thoughts on this. The other thing was maybe just going ahead and looking at Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Raghunath Das Goswami about not dressing opulently and about following sannyas. But I have one question. I wanted to join yesterday, but we were we're just running so much in these programs here. It's actually very nice. We spent 2 days in Monterrey, which is one of the three big cities here. And they have one of our disciples, it's interesting, Garadhar Gosai. His mother took him to the temple for the first time when he was 4 years old. And he grew up always associating with ISKCON somehow or other, but then he got really enthusiastic at some point. Started doing Sankirtan and took initiation from us somehow or other. And then he was like traveling with the international, big book distributors program and passionately distributing books and burning his body out, winning marathons, but very nice character, everything else. Then finally he couldn't handle it, so he went back to Monterrey and staying with his parents a little bit. But for preaching, wanted to do a preaching program from the very beginning. And finally someone said, well, why don't you, I have a place not being used, why don't you use it? So then they opened up a little bit of a preaching center here. There have been temples here before, but never official temple, I don't think, just preaching centers and restaurants and devotees. So he started preaching, doing book distribution, and then finally got enough of a stable income and stuff going, so they rented a very nice place. It's a very old place, a bunch of other buildings right beside it. Big open beams in the roof, simple. And everybody started coming forward, and it's amazing. It's just like he's a young guy, but so many older devotees, they don't even like, it's not even a matter of administration. It's just they all know, I cook, somebody else knows, I do temple maintenance, somebody else knows, I give classes. It's just like, you've done this before in ISKCON. And the social and political problems. We've been through this. We know we don't do this. We know this and that. Okay, So it's very interesting to see this place developing in such a very natural way. He's got five young brahmacharis living in the temple. More come, who are full-time students at the university outside, girls, boys, and doing programs and doing regular book distribution. And also the atmosphere in that respect in Mexico is good, you know, because people, they do have some nice, like Vedic consciousness from being in the tropical zone, from having this Aztec history, Aztec, and then from the Catholicism. They have a very personal form of Christianity with deities. And, yeah, so we did programs with the devotees only 2 days. And also then they had a program for us at, again, it's the, one of the very best universities in Mexico somehow or other. We went there. The person who received us was the head of the School of Arts. A very nice person, simple person. I thought he was maybe just a professor or something, but in the end he revealed he was actually in charge of the whole School of Art. So we did a Light of the Bhagavat again, an art presentation. And afterwards he sold very good sales of Bhagavad Gita and everything else from the students. And he took us around to every one of the classrooms and introduced us to all the art students and professors and talked about what is the purpose of art. And so we're talking to him about doing a full symposium next year, and he was asking very practically, well, what do you need, what kind of space, and this and that. So all over the world, my experience is that people are beginning to look at the Hare Krishnas as like some kind of institution. It was see what it is, you know. And so it's a matter of just getting out there whenever there's opportunity and according to our natures and letting the news get out. So now here we're in Mexico City and also some programs in the universities, the university in the morning. And I learned a lot about how to do this program so long. But we can't communicate with people because we're coming and going, traveling. But what it was part of the ethics and education section that the university supplies for all their students there. They, you know, culture, you know, character and stuff, and things like that. So she put us in that presentation. And she also had a questionnaire for them about ethics, morality, and stuff like that, which if I had a copy of that before the lecture, then I could have adjusted the lecture tremendously to fit in with that. You know. And then, in the afternoon, we went to another devotee school. It's like a superior high school. It's called a preparatory college prep school. He teaches psychology there. And he had a whole demonstration of Light of the Bhagavad art set up. He had an inauguration, the beautiful sand painting of the Ram Yantra. So we talked a little bit. The devotee did a very nice article for the Ram Yantra. The students were looking at all the art, Light of the Bhagavad. They went in the auditorium, and all the brahmacharis had this big rousing kirtan. So all the students, of course, auditorium held about 800 people. There was about 600 students there. And then what we did then was the professor then I had him interview me, and that was the key. I mentioned this because anybody else, because he knew what the interests for the students were and what the topics were, and so that he could adjust the dialogue discussion. And then afterwards, again, very astonishing questions. You know, the depth of the development like that. Then the devotees had a full feast and more kirtan. And everybody's asking, hey, when are you coming back? Where's your temple? Like that. Do I have to shave my head to join? So I've been doing nice preaching here, nice sankirtan like that. So anybody else have any thoughts about this verse, about sannyas, at this point?
Yeah. Okay, I unmuted everybody in pre-conference. We actually have been talking a lot about this.
Yeah, why don't we bring, I'd be interested to hear Maharaj's thoughts on that. We had an interesting discussion, Maharaj, the other day. We were talking about sannyas on a couple of previous verses ago. And the discussion came up, well, you know, Prabhupada was talking about that, you know, one must free himself from the well of household life and prepare himself to take sannyas. So, the question arose, and we had differences of opinion, and I certainly respected them all. How does that really apply to us in ISKCON? Does it mean that literally that all men should prepare themselves to literally take sannyas, or does it mean that at least figuratively, you know, we must, you know, either literally take sannyas or at least figuratively, if it's more peaceful living in a household situation, that one at least frees himself from all the different levels and stripes of sex desire, maitonari. One point is, even within ISKCON, sannyas, you know, generally when one takes sannyas, it's understood that he's a, at least at this time in ISKCON, that he's a, you know, seasoned preacher, and that's really one of the reasons. I think it's one of the qualifications when taking sannyas, is that he's preaching, and what is his preaching field going to be, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm interested, I think we're all interested to hear your thoughts on, you know, what does that mean when Prabhupada says, you know, everyone must take sannyas?
I read the previous verse, and I was wondering if that was actually a discussion, and what the result of your discussion was. So I'm hearing now a little summary.
The answer, yeah. Well, we had just different, you know, differences of opinion at both ends of the spectrum. One, you know, at one side that, you know, yeah, we, you know, this is serious business, and ultimately everyone, all men should be prepared to take sannyas, and then I guess ultimately all women should be prepared that at some point their husband will in fact take sannyas, and others had a more liberal interpretation that, as I was explaining, sannyas, that at least within our family life, we really turn it into a temple and spiritual, you know, spiritualize it.
I guess, of course, a big topic, but one kind of extreme way to look at it is to ask the question of whether or not all men in ISKCON should die or not. Do we think that all men in ISKCON should die or not?
Should die or will die?
No, should die.
And oh yes, okay. If you're going to say should die in the material sense, like that was that song of George Harrison's, "The Art of Dying." Yeah, we should die. All the men and women, we should all die out of this material world and take birth in our spiritual eternal relationship with Krishna. Leave this all behind.
Yeah. And so then, it's kind of, that's the whole point, is that, just kind of to summarize everything, because I've been reading this a lot and thinking about it myself and everything else and so on. As far as I can tell from reading Prabhupada's books, on and on, everything else, Prabhupada is kind of saying that in the present age, vanaprastha is enough, you know. But at least we should do that. We should give up, what he said, we should give up, social identification. You know, I belong to this, I belong to that, I belong to this, his family. Okay, and for then husband and wife to live together peacefully, sell the big house, give up their authority in the family, and engage full-time in devotional service in some place like Vrindavan or Mayapur, especially he recommends those, you know, where you're just surrounded by service. Then that'll be enough to put us in a high enough consciousness. And then, yeah, maybe it's just natural because Krishna will push us out of the body. The short-term memory starts to fail. The teeth fall out. The liver stops working, you know. Like I was saying, you're probably experiencing this as you go on. Your internal life there has become more and more subtle. And so then actually they can respond to subtler things. And you don't have to worry about learning new things because you can't do it as much as you used to. And so the body automatically pushes us into this, you know, sannyas situation. So if we're in a good vanaprastha situation, it becomes very natural. And as far as I understand, that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. He was living in a little kutir next to his house where his family was. And of course, his wife was very much taken care of by the children and everybody else. And they would be bringing his lunch or something. Or he'd eat something once a day, simply the same thing every day. And he would say, "Papa, here's your lunch." And he would say, "Hari Bol," something like that. And so he was, you know, a little bit conscious of the external world. Maybe engaging in Krishna Katha with those who are Krishna conscious, and that was sufficient, you know, like that. You know. Other than that, Some ways, if we're afraid of taking sannyas, then we should take it. If we think no one's going to take care of our wife and our family after we're gone, then we should take it, because that's the big problem, that we think we're everybody's best friend. We think nobody is our friend. And my own personal experience of going through it was it's very natural. I was a vanaprastha. I joined the temple, and already my wife and I were, you know, in a situation. You remember how it was. I basically maybe remember in 1972 or something, when I first was becoming a devotee, I started following the principles, and of course I didn't know how to do it exactly smoothly, so some fanaticism. And I became a vegetarian. And 1972, as I remember, if you became a vegetarian, that meant either you were a homosexual or a communist. You know, only homosexuals and communists were vegetarians in 1972. And my wife's sister-in-law actually asked her, she said, "But you're going to have kids, aren't you?" Like that. I mean, your husband's become a vegetarian, but you're still going to have kids, right? Yeah. So it was difficult for her. I have no criticism whatsoever. She's a very nice person in many ways, but it's just, you know, we didn't know how to do it. We didn't know how to adjust things properly. And so in the end, you know, there was separation. And after 6 years, she got remarried, which according to the Parasura Dharma Shastra is dharma. And for a girl whose husband takes sannyas, after 6 years, she can get remarried. So things seemed okay. It all adjusted. Chanting Hare Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna. And everything adjusts if we find our ashram. So basically, I was living like a vanaprastha. In the beginning, I was trying to reconcile with her and some attachment. But finally, you know, I'm visiting my son, and he also didn't have any interest, really. A little bit, like that, you know. And so, okay, then it was recommended to take sannyas. You can do more service, preaching, example of being detached. So I did it. And the very natural thing in the beginning was kudichak. I was already kind of doing that, you know, just living I was a treasurer. I had my little room in the temple in San Francisco, doing all the treasury work and also the administrative work, the temple things. And so I was just, you know, living in my own little place near the social situation. Paribhajak, and I started this visiting different places. What's it called? Bahudak. I started visiting the San Francisco devotees, the devotees in San Jose, Sacramento. And it was sannyasi, okay, so it was a natural social thing to be going here and there and preaching. And I could see I was getting free from the ISKCON politics, because even in ISKCON there's this subtle politics. You know, he probably says it's a sexual gratification even to sit on the same couch with your daughter or your wife, but to speak of something more gross. And so, yeah, you get free from that because you're moving around and, you know, nobody identifies you with belonging to any particular political group, and so then they talk to you freely about things and ask you questions. You can give your advice like that. But I could still see that with some, you know, some of this attitude, well, look, you know, most of the time you're staying with us, we're feeding you, and this and that, so you should be supporting our view about things, and you should be participating in the kind of, you know, sankirtan we want to do. So finally I just said, okay, I'm just going to be completely independent, depend on Krishna. So we finished off one big project. Then I took off for Paribhajakacharya and had just enough money to take off, and that was it, you know. And it was a little scary, but it all worked out. It was amazing. Just one thing after another worked out. And then I was traveling internationally with also $50 in my pocket, less, and it all worked out, you know. And so I was about 1990s. After that point, I took sannyas 84, 1990. And I could see that, yeah, there is a Krishna, and he does take care of you. And maybe he doesn't want you to take sannyas, or he doesn't want you to take sannyas then. But maybe he does want you to take sannyas. Like Prabhupada said, I was horrified. But he felt Bhaktisiddhanta wanted him to. And then more recently, I know some devotees, very nice devotees, who've been, they developed a whole temple by themselves. They've done such wonderful preaching work. They basically made like about, you know, for 50 devotees, initiated devotees, they produced them. Their kids have become fantastic preachers and examples in ISKCON. And they made about 200 more families in general, just like ISKCON, members of ISKCON, and heading towards maybe full initiation. So the father took son, he finished his work, got his pension. He's asking me what to do. We were talking about it. I said, well, just come traveling with me. We'll go to South America together, and you can preach. And he said, well, what do I preach about? You preach about what you did, you know, how you lived a whole business career and didn't become an alcoholic and everything else, how you made a temple. So he started traveling, and then his son also wanted to come, and his wife also wanted to come. So we were all traveling together. And I won't give it away here. She was doing one preaching program about what she developed, and it was so nice to people. She had to do it two times in South America, you know, in the centers like that. His son was doing his university program, which was related to Krishna consciousness. He got right into big universities with it. They were so happy to hear what he had to say in his PhD work. And the devotee, his project became so successful that when he was in Chile, or in Argentina, he was just going to stop over like one night to see the temple in Chile. So the ambassador of India in Argentina called the ambassador of India in Chile and said, you got to get this guy to talk to your community there. And he's over one night. And it continued. He purified the program, went on to India. His spiritual master was Indian, had him doing so much work. And finally he had an article right in the Times of India like that, you know. So what'll I do if I take sannyas? Well, if it's proper, if you're supposed to take it, then you discover that there's no limit. I mean, there's so much preaching opportunity, you know. And if you're supposed to take it, you're ready. If you're not ready, then Prabhupada says you should study, do introspection, and develop the consciousness. So it's my experience that it can be useful to really get the deep connections out of your heart. Not just your wife, again, but your father, your mother. I was seeing how I still had these very subtle connections to my father, even after years of not seeing him. When I got the news that he left his body, I was having dreams about him, about different, you know, strong experiences. And I was amazed how deep these upadis go. So I think, yeah, the sannyasa ashram is actually a very good situation for both husband and wife. It's a very good situation. And it's not bad. There's nothing wrong with it. It's very nice. And actually, at that point, the connection between husband and wife and everybody else becomes more intense. Because if you're thinking about anything, you're thinking about full engagement in a devotional service. And then it's very natural for your eternal transcendental relationship to develop like that. So that's my thoughts.
That was wonderful, Maharaj. Thank you.
So your name is Tridandi Maharaj. Haribo. What's his name? Gopakumar, the Brihadbhagavatamrita, he says, sannyas can mean eating good food and not having to work. Yeah. So that's the trap. Because even taking sannyas, of course, there's all these traps, you know, becoming a civil widow, becoming a sannyasi, dressing all in a white sari or dressing in saffron cloth. Then again, the whole thing can be just eating good food and not having to work like that. You know? But he said, no, sannyas is just the beginning, you know, if it works properly. You know? There's Raghunath Das Goswami, I mentioned that, it's actually Antalila chapter 6, and it describes how Raghunath Das Goswami took sannyas, and he renounced his house, left everything, just to go to Puri to meet Lord Chaitanya. And when he got there, Lord Chaitanya gave him so much mercy and put him under the care of Sarup Damodar. And then he came back after bathing everything and got the Mahaprasadam of Lord Chaitanya. And I said, I think this went on for 6 days. But then he was feeling like, you know, a little bit embarrassed to be taking Lord Chaitanya's remnants every day. So he started just taking advantage of the free food, the Food for Life program that was being organized there. Different places they have prasadam for the pilgrims for free, whatever. Then he started just accepting the remnants of the servants, when the pujaris, when they come out of the temple. He was sent by the Singhadwar and take that, you know. It says that, what does it say? This is the text number 219, 6219. It is a custom for some Vaishnavas to beg from the charity booths and eat whatever they obtain, whereas others stand at night at the Singhadwara gate begging alms from the servants. Renunciation is the basic principle sustaining the lives of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. Seeing this renunciation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is extremely satisfied. 6.221, Govinda said to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Raghunath Das no longer takes prasadam here. Now he stands at the Singhadwara where he begs some alms to eat. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this, he was greatly satisfied. Raghunath Das has done well, he said. He has acted suitably for a person in the renounced order. A person in the renounced order should always chant the holy name of the Lord. He should beg some alms to eat, and he should sustain his life in this way. So here's the basic idea of sannyas means hearing and chanting all the time. All the time hearing and chanting. Classes, bhajans, japa, dreaming about those things. Yeah. 6.224. A vairagi, he says, a person in the renounced order, should not depend on others. If he does so, he will be unsuccessful and he will be neglected by Krishna. If a renunciate is eager for his tongue to taste different foods, his spiritual life will be lost. He will be subservient to the tastes of his tongue. The duty of a person in the renounced order is to chant the Hare Krishna mantra always. He should satisfy his belly with whatever vegetables, leaves, fruits and roots are available. And of course you see that in civilized places. This is the point too, is you can't have this kind of sannyas in Antarctica or Germany or Minnesota. But when you come to places like Mexico or Central America, Ecuador, you see that these things, it's just very easily you can learn how to live in the village and the places like that very simply. And everything is just available very naturally, you know. Yeah. Of course, this is maybe a more ample idea of sannyas. Now sannyas, Prabhupada says, means to give up, social identification, and then to preach to everybody like as part of the same family. You know? And that kind of sannyas, he says, is desirable. But just becoming physically renounced, he says, is good, but it's not possible in the Kali Yuga. In almost any case, living on wild vegetables, leaves, fruits, and roots. But in these tropical places like that, you can see all the devotees, practically speaking, they can do it. There's just so many roots growing in the ground and so many things like that. So with a little bit of effort, you can live very naturally here. And then you have all this time for chanting Hare Krishna. One who is subservient to the tongue and goes here and there and is devoted to the bellies and genitals and belly cannot attain Krishna. Prabhupada quotes this in the Upadeshamrita as it goes. Iti uti daya shishnodara parayana krishna nahi paya. One who is subservient to the tongue and goes here and there and is devoted to his genitals and belly cannot attain Krishna. The next day, Raghunath Das inquired at the lotus feet of Srupa Damodar about his duty. Raghunath said, I do not know why I have given up household life. What is my duty? Kindly give me instructions. Raghunath Das never even spoke a word before Lord Chaitanya. Instead, he informed the Lord of his desires through Srupa Damodar and Govinda. It's very interesting, of course, in terms of parampara, that even when he was physically present in front of Lord Chaitanya, all the communication was through Govinda and Srupa Damodar. The next day, Srupa Damodar submitted to Lord Chaitanya. Raghunath Das has this to say at your lotus feet. He says, Raghunath says, I do not know what is the duty or goal of my life. Therefore, please personally give me instructions from your transcendental mouth. Smiling, Lord Chaitanya told Raghunath Das, I have already appointed Srupa Damodar Goswami as your instructor. You may learn from him what is your duty and how to discharge it. I do not know as much as he does. Nevertheless, if you want to take instructions from me with faith and love, you may ascertain your duties from the following words. And Lord Chaitanya says, Do not talk like people in general or hear what they say. You should not eat very palatable food, nor should you dress very nicely. And of course, this is exactly to the point of today's verse. Do not expect honor, but offer all respects to others. Always chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, and within your mind render service to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. I have briefly given you my instructions. Now you will get all the details from the Srupa Damodar. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give respects to others, can very easily chant the holy name of the Lord. Having heard this, Raghunath Das Goswami offered prayers at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. Out of great mercy, Lord Chaitanya embraced him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again entrusted him to Srupa Damodar. Thus Raghunath Das Goswami rendered very confidential service with Srupa Damodar Goswami. So very nice summary instructions. The Bengali is incredible. Prabhupada quotes a song by Jagadananda at the very end of Upadeshamrita, which is a summary of all of our philosophy. Again, it's just one book. You can answer all your questions. Vairagya bhai gramya katha na shuni be kane gramya varta na kahi be ya be mili be ane. In Spanish, I haven't got the English here. Mi querido hermano, te encuentras en la orden de vida renunciante. My dear brother, you are in the renounced order of life. You should not hear ordinary mundane topics. Yeah? You should not talk about these things when you meet with ordinary people. Do not think of women, even in dreams. You have taken to the renounced order of life with a vow that prohibits association with women. If you desire the association of Lord Chaitanya, always remember the incident of Chota Haridas and how he was rejected by the Lord. Do not eat nice plates of food or wear fine clothes. Always remain humble and serve the Lordship Sri Sri Radha and Krishna within your heart of hearts. Die. So, Prabhupada ki. So, other comments, questions, suggestions?
I do have a question, but anyone else would like to say anything, please.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, wanted to ask you what this might be requiring a long answer. I know we don't have very much more time, but what is the best way to teach about renunciation to non-devotees? For example, I was preaching to this one woman, and she was really having a hard time wrapping her mind around following all of the four regular principles, and she just wanted to reject Krishna consciousness outright, and I wasn't inspiring enough for her. Whatever I said was not helping to have her see the possibility of this, that there's like a lot higher, you know, there's a higher taste, and, you know, and she just saw no purpose to, you know, give up these things for spiritual life. And then she just ended up, so I don't want anything to do with Krishna consciousness. You know, you all are just, you know, something. So, how can you teach someone else?
Well, again, different people are on different levels, you know, and so there's different kinds of, you know, Krishna consciousness means different things for different people. You know, for the gopis, it means something, you know, which is, I think Prabhupada says, if you understand the gopis after 10,000 lifetimes, you're making rapid progress, you know. So I say that's what I think a lot of it means, being able to diagnose, you know, the level people are on, and then presenting the Krishna consciousness in the right way. So Sukadeva Goswami says the first level is pantheism, the next level is mysticism, and the third level is monotheism, or Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, Sat, Chit, Ananda. So in the beginning, we can just talk with people about, for example, I heard about John Denver's name, but then somehow or other, I actually was, you know, looking at his songs on YouTube, and there was three famous ones, Sunshine, Annie's Song, and Country Roads Take Me Home. So the Sunshine, of course, what is it? It's a complete pantheistic song. Krishna says, I'm the light of the sun. And you can appreciate it. the country roads take me home. I was just thinking about New Vrindavan, like that, West Virginia. And finally, Annie's song in the comment thing, people are commenting on it, you know. And somebody said, you can take this song as anything. You can take it as some girl talking about her beloved, or you can take it as a prayer to God. And it is. You can look at the thing, and there's not, as far as I can know, there's not one thing in there that couldn't be taken strictly in the mood of Radharani's sentiments. You know? So that many people, that you can start just like that. Talk about things they can relate to and inspire them to have a little higher consciousness. And then devotees in this lifetime. The people that are becoming devotees, they had contact in a previous lifetime. So that's what I would say. In the beginning, there's just this, we can talk about nature and taste of water, light of the sun, inspire people to be decent people, inspire people to think about spiritual life. And when we're a little more ready, then we can start talking about actual practices and that lead to being in contact with your own conscience and acting according to that, being committed. And finally, devotional service, you know, depends upon being able to communicate a little bit of a taste, and then from that, put the regulative principles in the proper time, place, and circumstance. That, you know? And so, again, Muhammad, probably glorifies Muhammad, but as far as I understand, the basic principle in Islam is marriage. And there's actually some kind of, what's the word, like, Muslims don't get married, some of them, but it's kind of a prejudice against that. It's thought of being like a wicked thing or something, so on. So that's what I would say. You have to diagnose a person's level. We have to understand it intuitively and by scriptures, and then we can find out how to explain things to them, because some people are not ready for it, or it has to be put in a language they can understand and appreciate it. Walt Whitman is another great source. Walt Whitman has such nice poems you can relate about. He talks a lot about renunciation and sannyas in many ways, like that. Yeah. So any other?
Thank you.
Maharaj.
Yeah.
We have a question from Harsh Prabhu.
Oh, our good old Harsh Pradhan in Bombay.
Hare Krishna, one question I cannot speak. But why does Bhaktivinoda Thakur say it's better to be a householder? Does he suggest sannyas in later stage?
No, yeah, and the whole point is that pride defeats austerity. That's always the problem, everywhere. And in the Bible it says, when you do your fasts and your austerities, don't go out in public with a long face so everybody will see that you're doing Nirjala Ekadasi. Prabhu, I'm doing Nirjala Ekadasi. It's very tough, but I'm doing it, Prabhu. Yeah? It says, don't go out in public with a long face. Do your austerities and your fasts in private, in your closet. In your closet. And then God, who sees everything in private, will reward you in private. Like that. So that's, I think, the main thing is that we, you know, we take sannyas out of pride, prestige, and it's not proper. It's actually counterproductive. And for most people, the situation naturally is to be married. I said, Lord Chaitanya told Raghunath Das Goswami, don't be a crazy fellow. Get married and enjoy life in a civilized fashion. But internally, you know, cultivate Krishna consciousness. And when you're in a proper position, then Krishna will make the arrangement, you know, for your external position to change like that.
Yeah. If nobody else has a question, I have one for Glenn. I just wanted clarification about the word that you used. I actually never heard the word Parvasa Sutra. I have heard the term Mahavakya. Is that synonymous with, you know, like important essential verses?
The verse Pari, as I remember, it's Pari. Paribhasya?
Paribhasya.
Yeah, Paribhasya, BH. It's the verse that makes everything come together. Like, you know, it's not like exactly, it makes more than just like the essential verse, it's the verse that makes everything kind of fit together properly. So as far as I know, our acharyas do say that in the Bhagavatam, the Paribhasa Sutra is Ete Chamsa Sakalpum Sam Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. At the Bhagavatam accepts so many incarnations, so many things like that. But the Bhagavad Gita is now trying to establish that Krishna is the Bhagavan himself. So other people, they argue whether or not our acharyas say it or not. But some people say that, yeah, this Anyabhilasita Shunyam is the Paribhasa Sutra of Paribhasa.
I did a different spelling. Couldn't find now. I see all kinds of references. Paribhasa.
Yeah. Okay, so these classes for me are very, very inspiring and very helpful in my own spiritual life. Next week we'll be back Friday. We'll be in Miami, I guess, next week, getting ready to make the big jump to South America. And after that, I don't know what will happen down there in terms of communication. You know. But now we're going to go. We have a whole program, about 45 minutes to a nice big home program. And we come back. And this evening there's a whole meeting with our temple president about one of our disciples here, on Mataji. She's done so much sankirtan, she doesn't have any padding on her feet anymore. She's incredible. She's just always taking young girls out for like traveling parties and stuff like that. She said five different men have asked to marry her, but she said this never clicked, you know. And now there's nobody taking care of her. Her jaw is rotting. So unless she gets some care for her jaw, it's going to fall loose. So I have to chew using her hands. You know? So we're trying to work out with the temple president, a whole arrangement to get the surgery taken care of. And then after that, tonight's program is the Prabhupada night. In South America, they have Prabhupada night, all the different temples. But it's always funny to me because the only time in English I know this thing occurs, like the night of, is this thing, the night of the living dead. That old movie in the West. So the Prabhupada night always seems kind of funny in English like that. But it's a nice program. Tonight we're going to talk about, how to serve the spiritual master and how to relate to older godbrothers like that in that service like that. So I guess we'll be able to see you next week. So thank you all, everybody, for your association.
You know, Maharaj, we have Prabhupada night on Saturdays here, and it's actually very nice. We've been through different books. We've been reading a whole series about Prabhupada's exploits and his whole pastime and establishing the Bombay Temple. Quite exciting. So actually, it's really nice.
It's very nice. But I didn't know in the U.S. we had it and didn't encounter it. Yeah, it's a very nice program. So Paul Padaki, you die.
Bye. Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna, everybody.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.